done by the content advisors, reviewing our performance as a committee. And yeah, so it was going to facilitate a discussion on the review and the plan going forward, a committee plan, committee review and plan going forward. So we dropped that one and we can pick it up at any time. We didn't want to burden this meeting that has already lost 1 hour with an item that we can have another time to deal with it. I wish to apologize for our guest tonight, that we delayed the start of the meeting by an hour due to the sitting, as I indicated earlier on, that overlapped into our time. So my apology to the Chief of the South African Defence Force. I see that he is on the platform. My apology to the, maybe let me say the Chief and the delegation that is in the meeting accompanying the Chief, the SADF, and the delegation that is accompanying the acting SADF. We were told that Dr. Kamede is acting in the position of, is acting Secretary for Defense tonight, but we'll deal with the apologies when we get to that time. So I'm mentioning that in basically acknowledging her presence as well as the presence of the members of her delegation. We also have guests who are in the meeting. They're also welcomed. I tender my apology to them as well. It was a situation beyond our control. Now the time is 1 minute past 7. Maybe we should get down to business. But before we do that, let me run through the agenda so that I put it to you for concurrence, given the amendment that I effected without consulting your colleagues. My apologies up front. The amended agenda now is opening and welcome, 2 apologies. 3 is the briefing by the Minister on the appointment of the Reserve Force Council and the Chief of the Reserve Reserve Force. And the briefing by the DOD in response to the succession planning discussion, status quo challenges and the way forward. And 5 is consideration and adoption of the minutes, and 6 is closure. So essentially, these are matters we are discussing tonight. And the 4th item, the succession planning discussion. It's basically a follow-up on the discussions we had earlier on with people we invited just to discuss, to share with us their views on succession planning in general. We're not picking on the Defense Force on this one, because it's mainly at the level of the Defense Force. We next week or week after next, we'll be meeting with the Department of Military and Veterans. We'll also be placing this issue, the same issue or similar issue on the table. I will come to the point when I introduce it, just to say a bit more on it, and I don't think it's time for that now. Let me start with the apologies. Brian, sorry, my apologies. Nandipa, do you have apologies?
Good evening, Chair, and good evening to the members and everyone in the meeting. We have an apology from the SecDef, an apology from the Deputy Minister, and also an apology from Ms. Mthembu. Thank you, Chair.
Who is the other person?
Ms. Mthembu. Ms. Mthembu.
Oh, yes, a member.
Yes, Chair.
And let me also tender my apology. I thought it was going to be part of that item, but I see that the minister is in the meeting. Minister, good evening.
I'm sorry, you know. I'm sorry, sir. Good evening.
Yes, minister.
It's the day when we feel like it is morning.
Are you done, Minister?
Good evening, sir. We are here. I'm sure you already have received the apology for the two members of our delegation who are not in. But the rest of us are here. I think the chief of SANDF is also in the meeting, and he will be dealing with the item number 3. I think that Mayor Gamede Le Ndate HR will deal with item number 4. But we are present, sir. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Minister. And really welcome to the meeting. Without much ado, Minister, we are now on item number 3. Let me just check if the apologies are accepted. Colleagues, are there any comments on apologies?
Chairperson, just my comment, and I know it's the committee's prerogative, and obviously we accept this, but I think it is just the right thing that those individuals should submit their apologies to the committee, addressed to the chairpersons of the committee. So the fact that we have received it from secretaries or parliamentary liaison officers, in my opinion, is not right. We accept that. But they should address it to the committee and to you as a chairperson. I'm sure anybody of those have got access to emails and to WhatsApps, irrespective of where they are in the world. So, you know, the right thing is just to submit it directly to us and not expect anybody else to do that. Thank you.
Any other comment? Okay, doesn't look like there's another comment. Well, I didn't say anything wrong. As I pointed out here, Mr. Murray, I think I must state it in this meeting because you've raised it. It's practice everywhere. In fact, across government, that when a minister or a MEC or an HOD is not going to be present in the meeting, they instruct their CEOs, their PLOs, to communicate that to us. So I accepted in that spirit that this practice, and it applies across government. And I didn't see anything wrong that the PLO communicated the letter or the message of the deputy minister. And I think it's the same PLO or a different PLO who communicated the message of the department in relation to executive who's still on leave. But I'm not discussing the content of the letter or the apology itself. I'm just raising the how part of it, how it came to us. So so I did raise that point, but I'm just saying it because you've raised it. All right, so without much ado, Minister, the item is on the table. The term of office of the Reserve Force Council expired some time back. It's several months that we don't have the Reserve Force Council. And I recall that you were to look into that and then make a determination as to the way forward on that aspect. So, and then the second aspect is relates to the chief of the reserve reserve force, whose post was vacant since end of last year, and it remains vacant, and an official in the department was just standing in his time when we called for information, just to present on behalf of the reserve force. We didn't think it was a good thing, but there again, we know that he's such a senior position, and it requires you, Minister, to do some consultation and get the necessary buy-in before you make a determination. Over to you, Minister. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chair. It is true indeed. The last time we engaged on the Reserve Force Council, we said that we accepted that their time was done. We have been interacting with the council. We are in the process, Chair, of making our determination on the Reserve Force. There are some interesting matters that, in fact, they had just initiated before COVID hit them, which we think would be a pity if we were not to allow some of them to conclude. If you give us 2 weeks, Chair, we would be able to come back to you and just tell you how we are concluding the matter. But we are on the final stages of establishing the Reserve Force Council again. On the matter of the Reserve Force, I think that the chief is in. There is movement there, and there is an appointment which I think the chief of the National Defense Force can make the announcement on. I beg to defer to the chief of the Defense Force, Chief. General Mafanyi.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Minister.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Minister of Defense and Minister of Veterans.
I just want to reconfirm once again that yes, indeed, approval was received from the Minister of Defence and Little Veterans with regard to the appointment of Chief Defence Reserve. The process had been tedious and we followed due processes in identifying the right candidate, and that candidate had already been informed and the paperwork had been concluded. The promulgation and the announcement, the formal announcement will be done during the course of this week, before the end of this week, being tomorrow. That will be the formal announcement on the member that has been appointed and approved by the Minister of Defence and Military Veterans. I submit, Honourable Chair.
Thank you very much, Chief of the South African Defence Force, for that presentation. And the announcement will be made tomorrow. Colleagues, are there any comments on the first item?
Chairperson, if I may, just ask, I the fact that the person has been informed of his or her appointment, is there no way that the chief can share the information with us? Because by tomorrow it will be announced officially, but we will not know who it is. So we will have to read in the media somehow. And I mean, this is an opportunity where the chief can share it with us, or he could have shared it with us yesterday, if it is a secret. But I would just appreciate if it's on the agenda, so it will be good. Be much appreciated if you can share it with us. Thank you.
Any other comment? Well, I'm not too sure. I think the announcement will be made tomorrow and not today. It is a public meeting. Now, if he mentions the name now, it defeats the plan they have for tomorrow. So I think in view of that, let's keep it at that for now. I know, Mr. Mare, you want to know that tomorrow my name will be announced. So just wait until you hear it from the chief tomorrow when he announces my name.
Is that a hint? That we must follow? Maybe, Chair, I must ask: Have you submitted your resignation with a speaker already?
Yes, I will do that tomorrow before they make the announcement during the day. All right, colleagues, thank you very much. That was in jest. Maybe we'll leave it at that for now. And then let's then move to the second item. The second item relates to succession planning. You'll be interested to know the issues that came up during our symposium with the various guests that we invited to discuss the issue of succession planning. I think the most critical part, Minister and the Chief of the SNDF, is that there seem to be an increase of senior members of the Defence Force, occupying positions beyond age 60. In fact, some of them received their promotions when they are too close to 60, to 60 years. I think the only chief of the Defence Force who was able to serve a longer term, I think two terms, let me say 10 years, but not two terms, 10 years, is the previous chief of the Defence Force, who possibly moved in when he was much younger, comparatively speaking, or relatively speaking, and was able to take 10 years easy. Minister and the Chief of the Defence Force that by 2027, the SNDF will lose about 107 generals through natural attrition. So that is five years from now. If you look at the age profile of the generals, by that time, about 107 of them would be gone, would have exited the system. And so in 5 years, time would experience that exodus. I mean, within this period of 5 years, will experience that exodus of members. Secondly, I mean, next is that you see, when a vacancy occurs, it takes a bit of time before an extended period before it is filled on a permanent basis, leaving senior managers to act in those positions. And we know the risk attendant to that is that if you are in an acting position, you tend not to make long-term commitments and decisions. And that when that happens, then some paralysis kick in, and that may actually create a situation where there is some restlessness within the members. It has not happened. We're not too sure if it has not happened, but acting positions, they bring with them some, indiscipline or some kind of a culture of instability. Let me say instability within in organizations. So we went through all these issues together on our own, and also looking at the age factor, the age profile of the Defence Force, because we're not looking at the top management. We're looking at the whole profile, and the fact that we are starting to have an aging organization. So that today we have recruited soldiers from the reserve force to man the our borders, and basically to complement our regular force. In some cases, it's largely because some of our members, health-wise, it no longer permits them to take up demanding missions. Health, their health status, the health status, as a result of them being in an advanced age, it's starting to become a problem for the defense force. And so you need to keep, especially the troops, young. But for you to keep them young, it means that there's got to be a constant feeder into the army. And also the promotion. In some countries, you remain in one position for up to 4 years before you move to the next position, you get promoted. And when you don't get promoted, because only one, as you move up, the system is like a pyramid, only one person can be promoted, which means that some members will have to move sideways, some even leave the system, so that they allow the seamless of the members of the organization. Part of our discussion, but we thought today we should discuss this issue, and we'll also do some further study on the issue in the hope that when we have all the information, we can come back and have another round of discussion on the same matter. We thought before it starts to become a crisis, let's sensitize the leadership of the Defense Force. This is on the table, that this is what we are seeing. In other words, there are flags, maybe it's existing in our minds only, that we no longer have that agile force that is, backed up by their youthfulness, age, and good health status, as it were. So I thought I should just leave it at that, just to flag issues as they came up, so that you come, the minister and yourself, chief, come in and then allow us some discussion on the matter. We're not committing anybody to anything, but if there is policy on the issue, we'll prefer that it be shared with us so that we understand it. I thought I should just leave it at that. Minister, I'm sure you've listened to me tabling the issues. You may want to make your own remarks before the chief and the other generals who are here to support him come in. Over to you, Minister.
Chair, I would agree with the remarks you've made. That is our own submission. And part of the reason I keep on harping on going back to our policies is precisely because we've got that issue. You will also remember that in our budget speech, we referred to the bulge lower and the bulge up. And that is the reason why we need to be looking at ways to deal with this, because the fact that we have also not been recruiting for years also contributes to that age. But unless you actually start relooking at the system and clearing it, in such a way that you keep the critical skills, insight, and the experience, because you still need it, but you also create a structure that is young and very agile in the movement upwards, skilled but disciplined. You get into the crisis that you are talking to. Admiral Kubu will try and get us to navigate that, and then we will take we will take questions later. So I'm quite aware of that. It does scare me a little bit, because you don't fight wars with generals. You fight with the younger ones. They must be agile. They must do whatever. We also have been speaking to it, and I think maybe in the next 2 years, will be able to start a team.
Colleagues, have I lost the minister?
Yes, you have. We have all lost the minister.
Oh, I see. No, thank you very much. I was a bit worried because she was really coming to the nub of the issues. Maybe that thing was happening on my part. Minister, are you back?
I'm back.
So we're talking about that you've been also harping on the issue of an agile force.
Many systems, even in Africa, Chess, they have that. One of the things that I was discussing in that strip that Honorable Mare doesn't really like was exactly the issues of succession with the Russians. With them, they have a definitive age of entry and exit. At 46, you are exiting the system, and that is why they keep their force young. So if you have to be still there after the age of 40, and it is because of exits and whatever. So I'd like to allow us to give the Admiral space. Let us see what defense says. Over to you, Chair.
Thank you very much. And all right, let me just hand over to the Chief and Admin, Admiral Kubu.
Honorable Chair, Honorable Minister of Defense and Military Veterans, and honorable members of the Joint Standing Committee, I just want to make a very short remark in terms of the topic that has been introduced. We have always said that human resources are our most important asset, and as such, the management of such assets becomes of real importance. I therefore proclaimed that whilst we consider human resources the most important asset, we have to continue to take stock of that particular asset. So stock taking of the human resources is critical. I would like to indicate that the discussion that was presented by Professor Sessa and the Dean of Faculty of Military Science, as well as Dr. Kanyile, and evoked a lot of interest within the leadership of the South African National Defence Force. I would like to start off by indicating that there are certain processes that we came up with. We brought a policy position that we dubbed to be from cradle to grave. That was the guideline that provides us with how should we manage the Defence Force personnel from entry to the exit until when this member then goes into the Reserve Force component. Within that system, we had outlined the rank age pyramid that spells out the desired age at every rank position. However, this policy document was made by the lack of attractive exit process that is appropriately funded. I will not delve much on that because within the South African National Defence Force career management and particularly succession planning framework, we have got a DoD or the Defence Department of Defence Instruction Personnel Number 21 of 2001, which speaks about the Department of Defence policy on the promotion of members of the South African National Defence Force, which now becomes the baseline policy document that informs all our processes in terms of career management system. Yet, Admiral Kubo, as Chief of Human Resource, will expand on this aspect in response partially to some of the issues that have been raised in the presentation by both Professor Tessa and Dr. Kanyile on the 26th of May, 2022. Honorable Chair, allow me to revert back to you so as to allow Admiral Kubo to take us through this presentation. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much, General, for your remarks. Admiral Kubo, over to you.
Admiral Kubo is muted. Admiral, you're muted.
Oh, thank you very much, Honorable Mare. Chair, Honorable Sawa, thank you for the opportunity and thanks to the members of the Joint Planning Committee of Defense to give us the opportunity to come and present our position on this salient subject on succession planning. I also want to thank the Minister of Defense and Military Affairs and the Chief to have introduced this subject to yourselves. Actually, they've already made my life easier on certain things because they've touched on some of the things that I was going to touch on in my presentation. I need just to confirm that this presentation was called after the presentation by the Defense Force Service Commission and also by the Military Academy on the 26th of May, if I'm correct. And I know the chair, you did say you will give us an opportunity to respond to what they were saying or what they presented to yourselves. And this presentation will touch on the presentation that they've done, but also I will also indicate to the Joint Standing Committee of Defense on how we do succession planning. And where there is disagreement between us and them, I will also highlight to this forum why we differ with them in terms of certain position that they have raised at this particular meeting. Next slide. We can skip that one, but the purpose of my presentation is to give you a presentation on that particular subject. Chair, members of the Joint Standing Committee, I will follow the following scope. I will firstly start with the responses that we will make on the presentation by different experts. In this particular case, is the one of Professor Tetla and Dr. Kanyile and Defence Force Service Commission. I will do some general comments on their presentation. After that, I will highlight SNDF Succession Planning Framework, including the planning model for top officers, how we do succession planning. And I will also do the current status of top officers as at 31 August 2022. We will discuss the feeder group of the people in the military. After that, I will discuss what we always term the succession planning seminar, which is the tool that we use to do appointments. And I will come with some way forward and conclusions. Next slide. in terms of the response to various presentations, Honorable Chair, I can confirm that in terms of succession planning as a concept, we don't differ with both the Defence Force Service Commission and also the experts that obviously are coming from the Military Academy. It is an academic literature that we believe we all agree and subscribe to that. So we don't differ in terms of what we believe is succession planning, how it should be done. So in there, we do agree. So I'm not going to waste your time, Chair, and the members of the to go through the concept of succession planning, because there is no difference between us and them. However, we want to clarify on the some of the issues that were raised, as in particular by the Defence Force Service Commission on the age. And I know, Honourable Chair, you did touch on the age. We want to confirm that General Ngwenya did retire at the age of 60, not after the age of 60, as what was alluded by the Defence Force Service Commission. But the rest of the other members that have retired, we agree with them in terms of the age that was presented to yourselves. Next slide. If we look at the Defence Force Service Commission, we believe that the information that was presented by them emanated from the unhappiness from most of our people on how we do succession planning in the military. And we also are aware that these issues do come, and we see it also in a number of grievances that we receive on succession planning. It does not matter what rank level they are, from junior to higher or senior ranks, there's always unhappiness in terms of how we do succession planning. We, however, did not find anything that actually from their side that was talking to quantifying, you know, why the people are saying that. But from my side as the chief of HR, with the issues that talks to why somebody has been promoted or somebody has not been promoted, we fully understand that it's because of the transparency of our own process, that people always will question certain decisions that has been made. As long as we're not transparent on our processes, we will always be found wanting in terms of how we justify a specific person in terms of senior appointment and not against somebody else. And this is what we believe it is the reason why people are always unhappy with the succession planning. The age group, Chair, that you also have mentioned in terms of the people that retire, we have also realized that our people have been also questioning it, and they also indicate that this is purely because of us not having a proper succession planning, and we've always been found wanting when we have to replace, especially the senior echelons of the department, then we end up obviously extending the services of those particular people that are already within their compulsory age requirement. And this creates some unhappiness from our own people. We also have found that there is a lack of balanced view on some of the shortcomings of the organization career management or succession planning, which is the one that are creating some of the unhappiness that we have. And we acknowledge as the department to saying there are certain shortcomings. And Chair and members of the joint, I can confirm that the chief of the SNDF has already discussed this issue with me. We started 3 weeks ago on the same issue when we received the instruction from yourself to come and present. And both the chief SNDF and myself, we agree that we need to refine the process of succession planning. He's actually the person that also said we have to be open to yourselves on the shortcomings on this particular process of succession planning. So there is already an acknowledgement from our side. So what the Defence Force Service Commission has presented, although we believe that maybe they did not quantify certain things, but the shortcoming that they have also presented is some of the things that we also are aware about and that we believe that we need to correct going forward if we want to have an efficient and successful succession planning. I'm aware that the Defence Force Service Commission gave the impression that there are no measures and system to deal with succession planning matters in the DoD. We want to confirm that we don't fully subscribe to this particular one. We don't agree with it. There is succession planning in the department. I think the gaps are on how we implement it, and you'll see, Chair, as I'm going to go into the next slide, I will inform the meeting how we deal with succession planning in the organization, despite the shortcoming that we also acknowledge, but we don't agree that there is no some sort of succession plan. There is, probably we don't implement it the way it's supposed to be implemented. I will go to the next slide. The Defence Force Service Commission did talk on the issues of the One Force concept. We do agree and support the One Force concept in the SNDF. However, the Defence Force Service Commission was indicating that because of failure of succession planning in the organization, we appoint people that are in the reserves in the senior positions of the organization. This is maybe the opportunity for us to confirm that we don't appoint reserve force members in the regular force post. We do have reserve force posts like the one that we just discussed now, which is Chief Director Reserve. It is strictly a reserve force post. The system does not allow us to place a uniform, a regular force member in that particular post. In the HR concept, we talk to that the system will fail. The system will not take somebody like that. So all the people that are in the reserve force, whether in senior position or in junior position, are always appointed either in the reserve force post or in the regular force post. You can't mix the two. They hear what we believe that the Reserve Defense Force Service Commission wanted to talk about on the issue of the reserve being appointed in a regular force post. We believe it was after the extension of over the age of 60 years. Because if we appoint people at the age of after the age of 60, which we believe the age of 60 is a compulsory retirement age of all the uniform members, and we extend between 60 to 65. I think the interpretation from our side where they were presenting was that they classify the people that have been extended as the reserve force members. We want to clarify that they aren't reserve force members. They are still in a permanent capacity. The Defense Act does allow extension of the people until the age of 65 in a permanent capacity. And we have been using that in the last few years to appoint people that are already over the age of 60 to 65 using the Defense Act, which talks about permanent capacity of the people. The only thing that changes is the suffix, and you move from the PE suffix to a PR suffix, which shows that it is a short term or a contractual type of appointment for a specific period, whether it's a year or 5 years, but it is still a permanent appointment. In terms of the departmental promotion policy, they did indicate that a member cannot lay claim. We always believe that members cannot lay claim to any promotion on the grounds that he or she missed all the qualifications. So we also agree that not everybody in the military, and what the minister also mentioned, is covered under this, that everybody will be promoted to the next higher rank. If you don't have the exit strategy that the chief of the SNDF was talking about, we are bound to keep the people, even those that you know they're not going to be promoted in the future, because you don't have the system to exit them. So the exit strategy is key for us to be able to implement our departmental policy correctly, also going into the rank age pyramid, which we believe at a certain rank level, if you still have not been promoted, you're not going to be considered for promotion, you can be exited. Normally, Honorable Chair, members who are placed in promotional posts are always given priority to attend the courses. The Defense Force Service Commission was talking on this issue and saying we don't allow people that are already due for promotion, that are in the promotional post, an opportunity to be granted a space to attend the course. We always prioritize those people because sometimes you are forced because of the operational readiness or requirements of the organization to place somebody who is not fully course qualified into a promotional post. But the first opportunity that we receive, we get, we always make sure those people are going to attend the post. But yes, we can confirm that sometimes because of the exigency of the service of organization, we sometimes put people who are not fully qualified into a promotional post for us to consider them to operate within this particular post. But when the first opportunity comes, they attend the program. Next slide. The general comment that we want to make based on the presentation, as I said, mostly was around the Defense Force Service Commission because we did not dispute too much from the Military Academy presentation because it was more academic in terms of succession planning. We, as the military, and in consultation with the chief, we have confirmed that there are serious shortcomings with regard to our succession planning model and practices. And then, as I indicated earlier, that we have seen that with the number of grievances that we're getting, that people are not happy with that. We also accept that we don't have a dedicated electronic system that guides us in terms of how do we do succession planning and how we can be in a position to say this is the best candidate for the post, taking into consideration everything, profile of the individual, the performance of the individual, and also other things that talks on the disciplinary issues of the individual. We don't have an integrated system that will be able to give you the score to saying this is the best candidate outside the whole number of people that we are having. And we need to invest on this particular electronic system to guide us. And we know other countries are already having a system that will immediately say this is your top candidate if you look at all the other profiles that we require to consider somebody for promotion. We also do have different interpretation of career management in organization. People believe career management is about promotion. We differ on that issue. Career management is utilization of the people with the correct profile. The people that you can still move from one position to the other, even laterally, to give credence to the process. But it's the people that you can also prepare through a lateral process to prepare them to in future take a senior position. I.e., if you want to appoint the chief of the SANDF, for example, you can still move the chief of the SANDF into two or three lateral positions as a lieutenant general, preparing him or her to take over the position. But in terms of our system, when you talk career management, people always believe or think that when it's about promotion, we're saying is the utilization and preparing somebody to be efficient and effective in his current utilization, but also to make sure that in the future, the same individual can be able to occupy, you know, whatever senior position that will be coming. Our failure to apply the basic tentacles of the career management process, we have identified that as another shortcoming from our side, where there is no understanding of the process, and we need to look at that. We also do accept that we sometimes are not able to balance the personalities and the profile of the individuals against the requirements of a specific positions. And then sometimes it does compromise us when we make the final decision in terms of the people that we want to appoint in certain position. And these are the key instruments that we believe we really need to look at. Next slide. How do we do succession planning in organization? The chief of the SNDF has touched on this specific issue. We've got this instruction, DODI first number 21 of 2001. It guides the entire career management process in the DoD. And this is the document that we use when we do succession planning. It's not only talking about promotion, although yes, most of the time you'll hear that we will be talking on promotion on this particular DoD, but it talks also on the utilization and how people should actually be appointed. This DoD is the baseline policy document in terms of the career management system in the organization. It is aimed to prescribe a uniform basis for promotion of our members, whether it's reserve force members or regular force members, and it supplements the policies, promotion policies that we have from all services and divisions, because some services also have got their own promotion policies because of the uniqueness of that particular service. So not every time that the promotion policy of the Navy or Air Force, etc., will be the same because of the uniqueness of that particular, but the governing policy in the DoD is the one that we just flagged now, which they take guidelines from this particular policy for all the services to be able to draft their own policies that talks to their uniqueness within their own services. Next slide. Based on this particular policy, we have decided that certain rank level will be governed by the services, and the chief of the ACNEF is the career managers of certain rank level. In this case, with the policy that I just mentioned, the chief of the ACNEF is the career managers of all the colonels and above. This is the top officers in the ACNEF. He sits and guides the appointments of all these people at that particular rank level. But when you come to Lieutenant Colonels and Commanders Navy, this has been delegated to the chiefs of those services, not the divisions in this case, because services are the career managers. Yes, there are divisions that we have said they are also career managers, but most of the time there are people also wear the uniform of their services, like your chaplain general is a career manager for the chaplaincies, only look at the chaplaincy. And then we can also talk about the SAMIS members within the DI environment who are also the custodian of appointments for all the SAMIS members. But the rest of the other structures are what we call the functional structures, like your legal, like your log, your HR, they are just functional competency authority, but they're not the career manager. So career managers in terms of this policy aimed at actually only talking about the four services outside the DI in this specific one and the chaplaincy. Next slide. Every year, Honorable Chair, we can have what we call an annual succession planning seminar. The intention is to identify the correct people with the right profile who can fill the vacancies that are going to be discussed. And we normally use the whole year to start with. For example, we will say all the posts that are vacant between July this year and June the following year will be staffed. And we consider all those appointments. When we came with this tool, so we wanted to avoid the situation where the vacancies become vacant for a long period of time. And we wanted to say, even if we know somebody's going to leave in May next year, we staff the post now. So that come May next year, the post has been staffed. We, however, accept that in the last 2 years, especially 2018 to 2020, we did not have the succession planning which addressed this part of, you know, the requirements, so that we don't sit with the posts that are vacant. And I think that gap, we felt it when we started with the placements closer to the end of 2020, because you already had a two-year gap that you did not do any staffing. And I think it has caught up with us, and that's why probably the chair, you spoke about extensions of the people, etc., which probably we believe it was the reason for going that route, because we did not have formal succession planning seminar at that particular time. Yes, it was our own doing at the time, but yes, we accept there were good reasons that in that past 2 years, there were no appointments, but yes, we're still feeling it even now, because every time we already start doing, you know, catching up in terms of the succession planning of our people because of the 2 years that we have left. The HR division, under my guidance, we are the people that are doing the whole staff work on behalf of the chief of the SNDF, and we look at the profile of every single position that is going to be discussed at the succession planning with the chief personally chairs, and we advise the chief. As a collective with other members of the military command, which is the three stars, to discuss on a possible candidate to fill a specific post. And I can confirm it's not an easy process, especially if you take into consideration the number of people that you are having in the organization at different rank level, it becomes a really difficult, robust discussions to decide on who must actually take over. But at the end of the day, when we make that decision, we own it up, and we can confirm in other instances we do also make some mistakes, because we might not have known the other attributes of a specific individual by obviously not that information that we probably did not know about, especially if it talks about certain discipline outside the military. Because there are people that you might find that they are in the organization, as long as they've not been charged through the military legal system, you find that they've also got other charges that they have not been finalized and you don't know about it, and nobody actually whispered to us and say, take note that this person is facing this type of charges outside and the case has not been finalized. You can actually make a mistake by promoting that particular person and realize later on that this particular individual should not have been considered. So these are some of the shortfalls that we're talking about, and that's why we believe that we need to have a system that will close all the shortcomings that we just discussed since I started with the presentation. Next slide. In terms of the succession planning for top officers, as I indicated, we do have that. HR, we issue all these instructions in advance for preparations until we go and do what we do believe is the deliberate discussions at the succession planning. And then the attribute that we're looking at is the one that I just highlighted in the slide, the profile versus the post, the digitalization versus the performance of that individual, the disciplinary records. These are key. And all the other qualifications that we believe will make the person a better person if this person is going to be appointed in a post. Next slide. The chair, honorable chair, you did indicate also the age. I felt that I might just put this slide just to show you in terms of the top management of the organization, the senior structures, where we are in terms of the age level. You'll see that when you talk about the major generals who in the system are 41, the average age at that particular level, it ranges from 47 to the age of 59. But we do have major generals which are two-star generals currently at the age of 47. What does it imply? It implies that we already start having younger people being appointed at the senior levels in the organization, especially when we talk about the two-star general who is 47 years, which we do have currently. It confirms that we are actually rejuvenating, we are progressing. I'm not saying, Chair, that 40 is the right age, but if you know the history at those rank level, in terms of the people that we've been appointing, at the two-star level, it used to be an average of 53 years, etc. But we already started going into the 47s. You go to the big gens, you'll see as well, we already have the one-stars that are at the age of 42. years of age. And canals at the age of 37, we already having them. So this age group that I just highlighted, it actually start talking to us in terms of the rejuvenation of the force. To say you start having younger people coming in the organization at a very senior level that will obviously be able to perform at those levels, trial and tested, been put through the whole training regime of the military, and they are capable of delivering at that rank level. And it's also critical, Chair, Honorable Chair, to mention that we coming from a difficult time with integration. And if we know where we started with integration, the age level at the time was what we had to start working on. And then we're happy now that most of the people are retiring, and now you'll start seeing the younger age group coming in. But there were no option for the military to rejuvenate quickly during integration. Otherwise, they actually adversely impacted on the process of transformation, not only transformation, the process of integration and reconciliation. These are the issues that could have impacted. That's why we took slightly longer to start talking about this number of age groups that we're talking about now, which we believe is changing the pattern of where the military is going and rejuvenation at that particular rank levels of what we believe are the highest rank in the military. Next slide. The feeder group, these are the people in terms of the senior rank level. If we look at the feeder group, lieutenant colonels, which are slightly lower than what the chief of the SNDF controls as part of his succession planning, you'll see the number of the people that we are having, 2,267, which are the lieutenant colonels that we are having. And you can see the number that are already staff qualified, which are ready to take over as colonels if any one of them retire. And this number, we believe, is the correct number where we can be able to replace the number of people that are retiring every year, especially if we continue keeping the number of staff qualified people at this level. And when we say staff qualified, it means these people, in terms of their functional training, they are already qualified as well. This is just this qualification that we expose them to actually take over as senior members of the military at a very senior rank level. And you can see the numbers. We can, yes, one could still say 281 is not that much. But if we look at the attrition at that particular rank level of the colonel, is a number that can actually be in the position to fill the post that we are having every year. And then we can also talk about the average age as well. You'll see that we already have lieutenant colonels at the age of 32. Yes. And it also talks about the number. And this is where the rejuvenation comes in. Younger people are coming in the system. Younger people have been trained and are competent to take the senior position in the military. Next slide. I've already touched on some of the shortcomings. I will just run quickly with this one because as part of the discussion I thought. Yes, we accept, Honorable Chair, Member of the Joint, that we fail sometime on the value judgments. We sometimes make decisions which we did not have all the correct information available to us to make certain decisions when we do career management. We do accept that sometimes, I call it a huge blind spot, sometimes that information was not available at the time. And then that's where probably sometimes you'll see that we want to correct some of the decisions that we have made, which create a challenge for the organization. The halo effect can be positive or negative, but in most instances, when it's negative, it creates a problem. We treat succession planning as very confidential. Succession planning does not have to be confidential. And it does, you need to have transparency of it. Most of the time you'll find that we will go there and, you know, we don't even know whether we must actually start saying to an individual, we identifying for a certain position, and then to an extent that, you know, there's already rumors going around, etc. Succession planning has to be clear cut. We need to know at any given time what is the pool of the people that are capable of filling this particular position. You cannot talk about succession planning if you don't have it and argue it in that sense. And that particular individual that you believe is the right person to fit the profile of the next position must be prepared in advance so that this individual is ready to take over. But sometimes in the military, we hide all these things, become too trustified, and it creates a problem for us. If we address these shortcomings, I think we will have a perfect succession planning going forward, where the right people are appointed, prepared on time, and be put in a position. The next slide. In terms of the way forward, Honorable Chair, and that will also lead me to my conclusion, we are trying very hard to reduce the inherent margin of error that we do. And the fact that we are accepting and acknowledge it, and the Chief also have already spoken on this issue personally with me to saying he's not also happy how we do succession planning. I think we are in a position to change and turn around the current process that we actually sitting with. We also accept that the 2018-2020 has put us where we are, where we did not have a formalized succession planning, where the gaps in terms of the filling of the position and having 2 plus minus 2 years of not filling key critical position has put us where we are, and also led to some extension that could probably have been avoided if we did not skip the 2 years that we just mentioned now. It is also submitted that there is a process of succession planning. We want to confirm there is a process, but yes, we need to improve on the current process. And the systems that we currently have in the military probably is not addressing the uniqueness of the organization, because we're running organization that's so big, which is complex, and you are inclined when you don't have a proper system to deal with this issue that you can make mistakes as you go along with the succession planning process in the military. We can confirm there is definitely an ongoing project to integrate, update, and simplify the process. And I think as we mature in the military and we accept our weaknesses, we will be able to address some of the shortcomings. Chair, members of the joint standing, I think this probably concludes just our position on what we have heard from the presentation and where we are and how we do our succession planning in the organization with all the shortcomings that I mentioned. I submit, Chair, and members of the Joint Standing Committee.
Thank you very much, Admiral Kubu. Let me thank the Minister and the Chief of the NDF for the presentation.
Chairperson, your signal seems to be also very weak, so you're also breaking up.
I also have to do something about it. How is it now?
Much better.
Okay, fine. Maybe let's stay on it. Now, I was actually saying that's the danger in the meeting presenting, because most of the time preempts all my questions that now I'm, to be honest, I feel adequately covered. That there is an admission that there are shortcomings and they're working on them, to me is a statement that it covers everything. That is central to our discussion. And two, that the policy itself They are still using a 2001. We're how many years from the from democracy? 7 years. 2001. 7 years. No. What is it? Yeah, the
Chairperson, can I suggest that you switch off your video because you are breaking up constantly?
Oh, thank you very much. How is it now? Is it
very clear? Stable
now?
Very clear.
Oh, okay.
Very clear.
Thank you so much. I was actually saying that Mr. Mare, the policy they are using is a 2001 policy. It was adopted in 2001. I think we were 7 years into our new dispensation. Am I wrong in my calculation? I think I'm not wrong.
You are 100%
correct. Yes, and at that time, there was a lot that we were still managing. You know, integrating the different forces, with all forces having the coming from their different dispensations, and we're trying to marry the different cultures, the different systems. And I think it's time now that we have a new system that recognizes the fact, I think Admiral Kubo has pointed it out, that you have a young people who have come in and they're now in senior positions. I mean, if you are, you are a colonel at the age of 37 now, it means that you came into the system post. You don't belong to the forces that were there before 1994. Certainly not. I mean, at the age, if you're 37 now, you are very young to be a member of any of the forces, right? Be it non-statutory or statutory. The same goes with those who are 47. 47 now, and surely the majority of them would not have been part of the different those forces that existed prior to 1994. And if brigadier generals, rear admirals, minimum age is 42 years with 22 years of service. Surely you start this person. These people started in the new dispensation. They were not pre-dispensation. So it says that we need to breathe in fresh air that takes into account that we now have a new crop. We've prepared, we now have a new crop of people. And one, and two, people who were in the non-statutory, and statutory, the majority of them are now exiting the system. And I mean, I don't want even to refer to the middle management of the time, you know, that became senior. The majority of them have exited the system. I think we can then start the new beginning. I agree that it's high time that this policy be reviewed. It's too archaic, in my view, and that's the reason why it presents these shortcomings. And the more we retain it, the more it eats into the morale of our own soldiers. I now open the issue for discussion. Let me just check who's on the black, who sent this up. all right, Mr. Mare, let me just acknowledge the hands. Let me just check who this is, because I'm seeing the name for the first time. My apologies, colleagues. It's Gareth, eh? Gareth, my nose has disappeared now.
It's up again. I don't know who the person is. Who's
that? I just want to check who it is so that I
know you.
Yes, Gareth, Dr. Gareth, yes.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Thank you for recognising me. I am a former councillor of the Reserve Force Council, and I'm a member of the South African Military Health Service Reserve. May I thank Admiral Kubu for what has been an extraordinarily candid, honest, and open discussion about the situation that our organization faces. It's enormously encouraging. Admiral Kubu referred to the one force concept that we have, and there's no question at all that there's going to have to be very careful attention, particularly paid to the reserve force component. The Military Health Service plays a significant role in this, and as we know, the reserve component has been referred to previously as the expansion capability of the SANDF. This is particularly true when it comes to military medicine. Career progression in the reserve of the South African Military Health Service certainly needs a great deal of attention. I may have missed it, and if I did, I apologize, but I did not notice that there was any reference made to the University Reserve Training Program, which many participants may know was implemented in 2005 as a pilot project at Wits University and then rolled out under the auspices of the Chief of Defence Reserves in 2011. Honourable Chair, I must say that this is a program that has not nearly reached its potential and its value as the expansion capability of the SAND, of the SANDF. And it's not just for the reserve, because experience in other countries which have been doing a similar program now for the better part of 100 years have found that many of their best people, the best of the brightest of young people from universities, have entered service in the regular force as well. So I would like to urge, please, that the University Reserve Training Program is something that does need to be given attention. The Reserve Force Council is and must be placed and empowered and take the responsibility for progressing this particular aspect further. I thank you, Honourable Chair, and I'll give way now.
Thank you very much, Dr. Hyde, for that. Maybe we'll need Admiral Kubu to talk a bit more on the military, on this University Reserve Training Program, but when it deals with the response, more on the side of information for the members. Right, the hands have recognized, I hope I'm not making a mistake, I've seen you, Mr. Mare and Mr. Raider. Are there any hands, colleagues, that I'm not seeing? I don't know what's wrong with my system.
I think you're right, Chair.
These are the only two so far. Okay, no, thank you so much. Over to you, Mr. Murray.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you for the presentation, Chief of the SNDF and Admiral Kubu. I want to start off by saying that I think the comments made by the Minister and the Chair, I can absolutely associate myself with that, and I think they were absolutely correct so far. I think the fact that the chairperson has mentioned this means that succession planning and career planning has not been very effective, and Admiral Kubu has admitted that. If we look at the average age of our defense force, which has increased over the last couple of years of just over 40 years of age, to now very close to 45 years of age. It means that rejuvenation has not had an effect and we are aging. If we compare our situation in terms of the figures that we have got, 40% of our SANDF are between 45 and 65, compared to general trends in the world of 7% and less. We have got less than 24 years of age, 4.3%, whereas the general trend in the rest of the world is 30 to 35 years of age. So it means that we have got a total skew staff component in the SANDF, and that has got an effect of how many of our soldiers are actually deployable, and we are seeing that we can deploy on no project without using reserve force members, because we do not have enough members, deployable members, in the regular force. So somehow we have to rectify that. And for me, age is not a indication of competency. Deliverables is rather a criteria. So you can have young people that is excellent leaders, and you can have older people. I'm an older person, and you can have older people who contributes very, very little. So I absolutely support, and I want to encourage that career planning must be adopted to address the challenges of today, the modern challenges, and of tomorrow, and the challenges that we're going to face there. So I fully support that. I also want to say that the challenges that we've got now, and what Admiral Kubo has given us, it starts with management. If career planning is not done properly, if it's not properly implemented and executed, it's a direct reflection on management. So if management doesn't do their work, then we sit with a problem. I want to ask Admiral Kubo, and this is just for information purposes, he has indicated that the Defence Act provides for extension of contracts over and above 60 to 65. We know that there are many rumors going around of who gets the privilege of getting extended contracts, and others who reach the age of 60 do not get the privilege of extended contracts. And we have seen in some cases where there was vacancies for a number of months that nobody was filling those positions, and even for longer terms. So can you please give us that details of the Defence Act, where it provides for that extensions, and also the conditions of that? Then I want to go to slide number 12. And Major General Rear Admiral 41. Now that is, if I'm correct, that is two star generals, basically. Can the Admiral Kubo give us an indication of how many 3 and 4 star generals we have got? And then also on slide 12, there's one point where it says excluding the following contracted members: 2 major generals, 2 brigadier generals, 2 colonels. What are the justification and the merits of those contracted persons in those ranks then as well, and how does that impact it on that? Because what we must ask ourselves, and that is part of the new directions that we have to take into account, is how many 3, 4, and 3 and 4 star generals, and even 2 star generals, do we require for the work to be done, and for the executions to be done, and for the operations to be done successfully? We have to think differently, and we have to do proper career planning. My view is, if you are open with people in terms of what are the qualifications, who are has been identified for future leadership positions, and obviously on all of that, there should be criteria. It's not automatically, but at least when they know that they have got a career and a possible career in the Defence Force, then they will probably work harder. They will probably invest more of their time and their effort, and they will probably deliver a lot more for us as South Africans as well. So how can that be done, and to what extent are they prepared to change the system? Because we have to change, we have to do it differently, so that we can have a different defense force focused on the deliverables and the challenges that we are facing. Chairperson, thank you so much for that point. And I'll stick to those questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mare. Over to Mr. Reiter.
Good evening, Chair. Thank you very much. I'll leave my video off. We have a power failure at Acacia Park for the last 22 hours or so. But I've managed to borrow a power bank, so I'm at least able to participate. I did miss some of the content of the presentation, though. I have read through it. I've worked through the slides that were forwarded to us. But I'd like to also appreciate the fact that there appears to be a good understanding of what the problem is. And a high degree of acknowledgement that, you know, the career planning and it hasn't worked. We need to acknowledge that has played a significant role in that. And I think that the accommodation of various different forces during that force integration process has led to incredibly difficult decisions that needed to be made, and a degree of accommodation that had to take place as well, which I think we will all accept. But the chairperson himself made the point that we are 28 years down the track. And people that have been integrated should certainly be nearing into their retirement age now. And we've had many criticisms levied at the South African National Defence Force from within the committee, from experts as well, that we are indeed a top-heavy force in terms of not only our age, which Honourable Murray pointed out, but also in terms of the ranking. And the fact is that we have a situation now where we have a lot of generals. We have a lot of senior ranking officers. And the question must be asked, certainly in times of the budget revisiting that we're busy with now, and the fact that there's been an acceptance that the budget needs to be trimmed down substantially, there certainly must be a review. Now, I mean, we note that there are a number of people that are, of course, qualified. They've done the number of years required in order to achieve a promotion. But I think Honourable Murray was quite correct when he said that, you know, age or the number of years experience that you have should not qualify you automatically for that rank promotion. And Chair, I think that is probably the biggest point that I need to get comfortable with in my head in terms of the outcome of this discussion, is that, you know, where a post currently exists, is there a review happening of the validity and the need for that particular post? Or are we actually having a look at trimming down some of these high-ranking posts to ensure that we become a force that is actually financially sustainable, and a force that can be spending their money on the right things instead of purely on salaries. So as much as succession planning is massively important, I think part of succession planning is envisioning, do we need to have four posts at senior officer level where, in fact, that job could be done by one person or two people, and we can start trimming down. And I'd like to hear more about whether that is being taken into account during this discussion that we're having about, who's moving into what position and the force rejuvenation discussion. So certainly I think that reviewing of posts is a massively important part of succession planning, and seeing whether we can't do things a little bit more carefully. And of course, my last point, Chair, is just on succession planning, and Honourable Murray pointed out it needs to be reasonably transparent. And I understand that, you know, one doesn't want to disappoint people before they've even started, and one also doesn't want to anoint people into a position. But I do believe if there are a clear set of criteria laid out beforehand in terms of, you know, certainly course qualification, number of years service, and but it should also be linked to actual abilities, so that there can be a much better buildup of trust. There can be a better understanding of why decisions have been made to promote one person above the other, and it can be accepted. Because if you don't have that, you have a breakdown of trust amongst the senior officers, and that can be extremely hazardous to the good functioning of a military unit. So, yeah, those are the two points I really wanted to make, Chair. Thank you very much for the chance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Rader. I think we have exhausted the hands on the platform, and maybe just to add one point before I invite the Minister and the Chief of the Defence Force to comment on the questions or respond to the questions. It's there was a talk of delinking pay from rank. And the reason why there was that talk, and many people within the military were calling for it, was so that you can then address this issue of stagnation, because let's accept it, there is stagnation. People remain in the same post for a very long time. And we will not be mistaken to also believe that that is a cause for the decline in the morale of our soldiers. We pick that up when we paid a visit to some of the bases of the military. And when you spoke to especially the foot soldiers, the issue was that the issue of stagnation, and that they stay very long in the same position, that some of them are now close to retirement, yet they remain in a corporal or lance corporal, you know, those very low position. And that when the time for retirement comes, you walk away with close to nothing after having spent all your years to the military. Due to no fault of their own, but it's the way we have been managing succession plan or dealing with the issues of career management within the military. So I was sitting where I am. I'm sure the minister has had people calling on her to really address the plight of those people who are in those positions. So we thought that the linking of the pay and rank, the pay from rank, will help address this issue. But again, it's a function of resources. If there are no resources available, of course, it may be an ideal thing that remains a lofty thing because it is incapable of being implemented. So I now invite the comments. As I said, I had my questions, but from the presentation, starting from the minister to the chief, and then the detailed presentation by the Admiral Gubu, I felt all my questions were taken care of even before I asked them. Minister, I will start with you and then the General. The General will then see how who else within his management will deal with the rest of the questions. Over to you, Minister.
Chair, can I keep my video off?
Yes, please do.
I think it will be a little bit difficult to respond to what you are putting to us, separate rank from the pay package, because the rank, the what you earn is also an incentive for you to perform. It's not just a matter of I am going to sit here and I'm going to earn. And if I don't know if I get you right here, whether you're thinking of things like adding grades within the same rank, so that I don't know. But for me, what we do need to start doing with the new intakes is to begin to look at our policies, begin to bring ourselves back into line, begin to define when the exit mechanisms, which are free and fair, because it does not matter if the time comes for a general to exit, if they are young enough. Like in all the other countries, that's where you have a retired general still being able to have enough energies to start a career in politics, to have enough to get into business as an executive, because the defense should enable us to be so multi-skilled by the time we exit that it is more of an enabler rather than it is where I am going to die. So I'm not sure how to deal with this question, but for me, it's also systems. It is also not to encourage people to think that because you are in a particular rank, you can actually bully people. Because at some point in my first 6 months here, I felt, no, I'm getting too many calls with people just thinking that if you are a minister, you can promote people. For me, promotion should come with that potential, that performance, that proving of myself that, in fact, I am a fit and proper person to be moved into the other rank. And at the same time, you know, our history says that we came from a past where we had to fit in and to deal with issues of race, issues of gender. Right now, we are now supposed to be moving where we're looking at potential and exploiting that potential for the best possible use of the country as a whole. In other words, we should be moving from a system where we look at the color. We look at from which formation did they come from so that we create a balance. We look from where my gender will determine my promotion because we want to make a particular case. So for as long as we are stuck in those in what defined us in the time of integration, and not pulling out to say now we are regularizing, now we are competitive, now you do not want a general who comes from South Africa to be looking slightly older than a general that comes from Tanzania and comes from another part. So we need to begin to regularize so that we also can prove what we are saying we are capable of. Create that space, succession made easier, identify and groom. There is no longer an issue of gender, thanks God. So we should be getting there. But I'm thinking that a general might want to come in now, Chair, and say what we intend to do. Clearly, we also have other challenges. We went on into this MSDS thing as a recruitment for young people across, because we're looking at the geographic, racial, and all that. Now, if we have an instance where you have people who did not make it after the 2 years of training, who were not found to be fit, who have dragged us to court, who now get military pensions, those people are away in their 20s. So there's something wrong also with the expectations of people of what defense can deliver. And so there is a number of weaknesses that we must look at. What is our recruitment? How many should we be carrying? Of the 2,000 that you're recruiting, how many spaces do you actually have? So that you actually do not create an expectation that once you are recruited, you are now at the recruitment, you are now automatically a full-time member of the defense force. But I think that the general might want to come in, the chief, and deal with the other matters that I may not have had properly and can't respond to properly. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Minister, for your comments. Well received. General, the chief.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. If I may also just continue without the video as well, just to enhance the audio.
Yes,
Major. Thank you, Honorable Chair. Allow me to start off by acknowledging the questions that have been asked and comments, because they are all enriching. I will not touch more on the issue of us revisiting the issue raised by Dr. Gareth Hyde on the matter of the university reserve training program that we were conducting, particularly to try and attract those that are at the higher institutions of learning so as to enrich our officer corps. The program has been very fruitful. We had some shortcomings, which I think Chief Human Resources will elaborate more on that, because whilst we have the program like the University Reserve Training, we also had to impart to those that we have recruited that they are first and foremost recruited to come and lead men and women in uniform. So we tried to balance between their studies and on vacation their training capabilities in our training institutions. I really think we need to revisit once again that form of rejuvenation, because it also gives us an added advantage in terms of coping with technology, because in today's world, technology has become a force multiplier, and that becomes now imperatively clear that our recruitment should not only be in terms of numbers, but in terms of competencies that we want to attract into the defense force. And particularly in the medical environment, you would like to attract people that are already in the stream that speaks to the health matters. So I indeed subscribe to what Dr. Gareth Hyde has been saying on that aspect of revisiting the university reserve training program. Secondly, I want to just touch on some of the issues that were raised by Honorable Ms. Murray, in that indeed career planning must be adopted to address the challenges of today's and tomorrow's issues, because what I have done currently, Honorable Chair, which I have also communicated both to the Military Command Council and to the Chief Human Resource in particular, is that we need to refrain from looking at succession plan as what we used to dub it as the meat market. I have said that at length to my command cadre that is responsible for the succession planning. And now we have now expanded and enriched this process by demanding that chief human resource, as I said earlier, should collect and collate data on the status of our members by means of what one can call as a stock take of our human resource, so as to meaningfully know what do we have within the organization, because the military is different from many other organizations in that mainly recruitment and movement cannot be filled by people from outside, but grow the timber from within, because for you to be a captain, you need to be a lieutenant. So I said we need to take stock and understand if those people that are within the organization are placed in the right place, and we are not putting people in places that they are not trained for. I just want to once again indicate that that being the focus will at least give us an opportunity to get to place people with the correct competencies and in the right position. I also want to just say before I head over to Admiral Kubu to add more, in that the military as a structure that is so hierarchical requires that the force design define what are the numbers of people that have to be in a particular rank. For a battalion, you need to have a lieutenant colonel to be a commander and the tribe to be a major. So same applies as to move up the hierarchy. However, I also acknowledge the comments that people are making, but in terms of the higher, the large number of those in top ranks, I think this matter can best be articulated when we look at the defense review that we have adopted, the 2015 defense review, because that, other than the fact that we have not yet come to present the force design and the force structure, but it gives us the guidelines as to how should our defense look like so as to be able to respond to contemporary challenges that are facing South Africans. Allow me, Honorable Chair, also to touch on the issue of the rejuvenation process, because we have been so transparent and we agree that the second plan has to be transparent. We need to start identifying people from the early age and allow them to grow within the ranks whilst they know, and that in itself, Honorable Chair, is a motivation to our people. I want to agree more with Honorable Director in that career planning should play a significant role in today's world, because we have now moved from the era of integration to the era of rebuilding in the form of force rejuvenation. So whoever that we bring should be somebody that will add value and allow the organization to grow. I will stop at that, Honorable Chair, and request that if you may allow Admiral Kubu as Chief Human Resource to add on the matters that had been raised. I submit, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much, General. Over to you, Admiral Kubu.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, and thanks again to the Chief and the Minister to have made life easier for me on responding to quite a number of questions. So, Chair, I will not repeat what has already been said by both the Minister and the Chief. However, I just want to reiterate on the issue of the Defence University Reserves, as what the Chief has indicated. It was one of those interventions that we wanted to have to be able to recruit people in the scarce skills, i.e. your engineer, your doctors, medical doctors, your technical people, etc. And it started very well when we started, but we realized later on to say during the period of recess, when we wanted to keep and train them and expose them to either basic military training or other functional training, we started losing some of them because it is the time that they also probably wanted to relax and be home. So the 3 years that we plan, or 4 years, depending on the time that they are qualified, they have to complete their qualification, it was always going difficult to get them in the system wearing uniform and obviously come and serve. But we did obviously try to, those that were available, we did try obviously to give them some training. And I can confirm some of the universities that were appointed permanently after completion of their qualification in both the regular force, and those that did not want to go in the regular force, they joined the reserves for all the four services, because every service had their own targets in terms of the recruitment of the university reserve candidates. We believe it is still a concept that we still need to use. We just want to obviously go back to the drawing board in terms of the training during the period of recess, which always has been a problem for all of them. We accepted that challenge from our side, but we felt that we need, but I think since 2020, when they were hit by COVID, we did not concentrate, and that's probably where we want to. We did not really aggressively recruit the university reserves. So the one that we were dealing with, or the one that we still obviously get them through, were the ones that were already appointed, because we also stopped the intakes as well. So we need to go back into that concept, because we believe it's the right concept. It does work. It exposes the young people, especially in the scarce skill mastering, in terms of the military. And as they complete, we know they are ready to come in the military. So yes, we still believe, as what Honorable Haider was saying, it's a good concept, and we also believe it is a good concept that we want to deal with. The Chief did touch on a number of things, issues that Honorable Marais did raise, in terms of succession planning, how we're doing it, but also on the issue of rejuvenation, the Chief did touch on it, so I'm not going to repeat on that particular one. Honorable Marais wanted to know, in terms of the section that we use in the Defence Act, in terms of the appointment until the age of 65. I can confirm that Chapter 9 of the Defence Act talks about the appointment, and Section 52, Subsection 1, will talk on that issue. And in that chapter or subsection, it will say we can appoint people in a permanent or temporary capacity until the age of 65. And this is the act, that, the section that we're using for appointment until 65. So either it can be permanent or temporary until 65, and then it is the section that we use for the extension that Honorable Marais was talking about. There was also a question in terms of how many 3 stars from Honorable Marais. We can confirm that we've got 9 3-stars in terms of our post-establishment, which is the 4 service chiefs and the 5 divisional chiefs, which is Chief HR, Chief Lock, CJ Ops, and CDI. Did I miss somebody? But we have got 9 in total in terms of our post-establishment. And then as to whether, you know, we require all these positions at that in those level, Chair, I can confirm that This is another discussion that we've been having at the Military Command Council. We did agree when we do our force design and force structure, it's an issue that we felt that it will also come in there. The force structure and force design and force structure will also look at the human composition for the entire DOT. And we're still busy with that. It's a concept that the chief is driving, and then we're hoping that at some stage when we finalize it and get it approved, it will address as to whether we need to have all these people at different rank levels in terms of their ranks, and then we will probably be able to make a proper appreciation. But I can confirm that that's on our agenda to finalize the force structure and force design of the organization. The Honorable Ryder did talk on the issue of the, but mostly was more of the comment, but I think in terms of the transparency of the process, I think I did acknowledge Honorable Ryder to say probably this is where we're lacking, and then we need to really to look at that issue as to, you know, whether the process is transparent enough and so that we can be able to deal with the appointments at the senior rank level. But say the one that you asked in terms of the delinking, I can confirm that we have done a bit of delinking. If I'm correct in terms of the year, I think it was 2009, when this concept came, we started operationalizing the concept. You'll see if you check in terms of the number of privates, depending on the number of years that the private can be in a rank, the private can be compensated at a corporal level, which means it's already the third rank level, but this person is still a corporal. I can confirm last year we went through an exercise and identified all the privates that has been in the system for a long period of time, with the military command accepted that we have probably done injustices to these people, and we agreed that we must come with a career intervention of this private that has been long in the ranks. And it was so interesting to say, even when we wanted to give them the next rank, they were already in the other rank after the same rank that you wanted to promote them. So we can confirm safely today there has been an operationalization of the delinking, and probably we just need to look at it again, because we accept the military is following a pyramid structure, and you cannot have it any other way. It will always have that structure, which is pyramid. Not everybody will go to the senior ranks, and if you do delink, it will be better, because people will be happy to be compensated and grow in terms of their salaries if you don't exit them out of the system. So the delink is still a concept. The current OSD that we implement will also use the same concept. If you look at technical people, the military university educators, most of the professional, we don't talk about the ranks anymore. They are functionally been promoted to the next higher rank, which is almost the levels closer to the rank level of the next ranks. Some even surpassing those. You do have technical people, engineers that are already at level 12, function at level 12, but you find that they are paid at level 13 and 14. So the delinking has happened probably in a different way, but we can safely say we have looked at that. I think, Honorable Chair, we might have touched, because the Chief touched on it. I did not want to repeat what the Chief has said. I might just have missed something, but I thought I might just touch on what the Chief did not touch, because he did touch on a number of questions that has been raised. I submit you.
No, thank you very much, Admiral. I think you have covered most of it, but you've plugged all the gaps that I've identified in the answers. I think you are correct that there have been a number of shortcomings in the succession planning process or system of the department. And I'm happy that following our discussion here, where we invited the experts to come and present on succession planning, you reflected on your own processes and systems and practices, and they have agreed that you need to go back and review those systems and practices, and so as to deal with these shortcomings, which have led to some unhappiness within the military. You said at all levels, from junior to senior. And you said one of the main gripe, or let me say what makes them or creates this level of unhappiness is the fact that there's been no transparency in the way you have been managing the whole process. Maybe that you're looking at it, you're looking at all that, and we will give you time. 2001, it's archaic in my view. It was developed at that time to accommodate the sensitivities of the time when we were amalgamating the different forces, statutory forces and the non-statutory forces. And we are now 28 years away from 1994. And we now have new people coming into office. And even at senior management, you have people who were not part of the pre-94 forces. So I think you can breathe into it new life. What we will do in the meantime, we'll allow you, General, to go to your own strat plan, your strategy meeting to hammer out a policy that you think talks to the now and tomorrow, not to the past. I think the minister was very clear in saying in the past you were looking at a number of variables and which were addressing the conditions that were existing at the time. Now we have different set of conditions, and indeed this warrants a review of your policies. What we will do in the meantime, we are not going to take the foot off the pedal. I think we're in the right direction. I will task the content advisor, Dr. Velemente van Respect, to talk to Dr. Moses Kanyele, to talk to you, Admiral Kubu, and consult one or two others to check if we cannot have another round of discussions with the experts, now from not within South Africa, from outside the country, with the advantage of this online system, we can actually connect with people from wherever to come and talk to us on their own experiences as part of deepening the discussions and enriching your own process. I think we'd want to leave it at that for now. And Minister, your closing remarks? I think we are done with this item.
Chair, I just want to say, if you allow me, that I think the whole committee support you in your assumption, and obviously I think all of us are in full agreement with how you have summed it up now, and I think you can be assured of our support, and I think the minister and the chief will also then hear that this is a committee version and a point of view. It's not a Cyril Taba a point of view only. We all share that same sentiment, 100%. Thank you very much.
No, thank you very much, Mr. Mare, for highlighting that is in the spirit of this committee, that we look at things the way we look we are looking at them. Honourable Minister, it's your last word on the... Maybe let me take the Chief, his last word, and then your Minister, to close the discussion. Chief, just your last word on the matter, and then Minister will close the discussion.
Honourable Chair, we take note of the advice and we will work tirelessly. And we will also, before the engagement, do our own study internally and improve on our processes. Our archaic policy will be reviewed, and that is the starting point that we'll take. Thank you, Honourable Chair.
Thank you very much, General. Good note to part with you. Honourable Minister.
Chair, I was quite emotional today. I met three youngsters, lieutenants, just qualified. I was very proud because I was seeing a future of South Africa that is very bright, that is very energetic, that will challenge us to become what we set out to be. So for me, the future is promising. We must just help those of us who are in this generation, must help just to play good nursemaids and midwives and allow South Africa to the potential it can be. That means we're not going to compromise on the quality of soldiers. We're going to do everything that we can do to enable them to carry on in the protection services of our country. I can only say thank you for this meeting and for the pleasant and positive remarks that we have all garnered from this evening. Thank you so much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Minister. Good luck to you and the team as you polish up the policy on succession planning. Until we meet again, you may disengage from the platform. That is at the time when you wish so. But the meeting has come to an end. But before we close the meeting, we'll take the minutes so that we deal with the minutes and close the meeting. Thank you very much, General. All right. Colleagues, can we quickly take the minutes? Please slide the minutes. Right. So these are the minutes of the 1st of September, 2022. So we met to receive a presentation from the National Conventional Arms Control Committee, NCACC. And then we dealt with our own item, I think our own items. And then this is the attendance. Just go to the attendance. I hope no issues with the attendance. Indicate if there are any corrections to be introduced. Move to the next page. Yes, this is the next page. Complete the page. All right. We can move to page 3. And move to page 4. We're checking if there are any corrections to be introduced. Page 5. Page 6. There being no corrections, to be effected. Let me thank the secretary of the committee for the minutes. And then, are there any, can I get the indication of support? Seconder and the mover and the seconder?
Chair, before I move, sorry, before I'm in the dark here and I couldn't see proper whether I am recorded is present in the meeting or watching the meeting, and then I want to support.
Okay. Oh, yes. Before you support, you need to be sure that you are reflected correctly.
Yes,
you are reflected as present. So you move the minutes and any second?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yes, you move. Miss Bartlett moves. Seconded by?
I will second, sir.
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Mare. Mr. Mare seconds the minutes. Was this the last item? I think the minutes was the last item before closure. Yes.
Okay, it was the last item.
It was the last item. Colleagues, we have gone 10 minutes over time. In fact, 14 minutes over time. Thank you very much. It was a fruitful meeting. Thank you all for the contributions. And let's sustain the discussion on the matter. I think it's not in vain. We are making an input into the process that is already underway that the chief started following the discussions we had with the experts. I should thank them, Ms. Kanyile. I should thank Professor Setla, and I should also thank the chair of the Reserve Force, the Defense Force Service Council, and other members who were present on the day. And on that note, the meeting stands adjourned. Yes, sorry. Yes, Mr. Bartlett.
Sorry to be disturbed. Me and Honorable Corsi, we are together, but her gadget died and she was kicked out because we are still without electricity in Acacia Park. But we're together in the meeting.
Yes, okay, that's fine. So record the Honorable Gosi as present because she was in the meeting but got kicked out by the system. With that, we thank you all of you at the meeting stands adjourned.
Good night. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.